It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Time to bring the bass back. All right, you guys, welcome to this week's episode of the Temple of Hoop podcast. I am your co-host, Coach Maples, aka J Mapes, here as always with the bro Kings. What's popping, my guy?
You know, doing good, living good, you know, the usual.
Right. Like I said, this, we don't discuss football in this, you know, pod no more. But you good?
bad day for me, man.
It's all good. A lot going on around the league. We're going to touch on a few things, talk about what we see at the quarter pole this year. But let's start with the Portland Trailblazers, man. Sitting at 11-13, just fired the GM, Neil O'Shea, after 10 years. Dame is out for the foreseeable, you know, future with lower ab injury. Not really what how serious it is, but they definitely got him on ice for right now. We've been telling Dame to run from the grind for a year now. is it you think it's time for the Blazers to blow that up and start fresh?
I mean, what we've been saying this every year at this point. I mean, it was time, you know. After they you know, they went to their Western Conference Final, they came back and they got bounced in the first round by Lakers. I mean, it was time to be done with that then. It's just, you know, to go in another season, you know, which is last year with the same group, and to come back again this year with the same group. I mean, I just don't understand what the vision is. I don't understand what they're trying to do. Could easily package those guys off, got a bunch of picks, and try to rebuild. But I really don't understand the game plan with the Blazers, man. Because they know they can barely make the playoffs as is. You know, they don't have anywhere close to a championship. You know what I mean? It's not like they're the Utah Jazz, which, you know, they're a dark horse contender, and if they make, you know, they strike on a few good moves here and there, some things shake their way, that they can, you know, win a chip. They're not like the Jazz. They're a significant tier below that. So I really don't understand what the front office is trying to do. I just don't understand that.
Yeah, I think just from the outside looking in, the biggest indictment on them is just never, for the whole entire Damian Lillard tenure, never getting at least a above average wing in there. Like, that is insane to me. A lot of it is just talking to people who know a little bit. Dame and CJ are hella cool. Yeah. So Dame just would never co-sign on moving him. Like, obviously everybody thought the last couple of years CJ was the avenue to getting that, you know, a better fit possibly. But it wasn't going to happen with him and Dame's relationship. But that's why I've been never being able to get a wing. And they did all this. They were 29th in defense the last couple of years. They bring in Chauncey Billups. He makes them, you know, basically they show in the stat-wise they're playing way more aggressive defense in the pick and roll, and still, 29th in defense. That's, to me, that's not a coaching problem. That's a talent problem to me. It's way beyond time, but, you know, Dame loves that place. That's the ultimate hurdle, right? And you know he's never going to co-sign on a rebuild at age 30. So, you know, that they're just stuck between a rock and a hard place. And then we both said it here, the worst place to be in the NBA is in no man's land, the middle, that middle, where you're not going to be terrible enough to bottom out. You're not going to be good enough to even be close to competing. But yeah, I think it's time to tear that up. You can get Covington. Contenders will give up a young player or assets for Covington. CJ will fetch a lot, obviously, and Dame will fetch a king's ransom, you know, depending on, you know, how you want to move him, because whoever trades for him is going to have a control over him for 4 years because of the deal he just signed. So you can get a lot for Dame because there's not a flight risk. Even Simons has some interest, even though you might want to keep him as a younger player. But yeah, it's time to move, to break it up in Portland. Y'all had a good run, man. Dame tried. He tried.
I just don't know what to say about them. Like, they have no buzz. You know what I mean? It's like that they're being stubborn at the same time. A lot of teams are just being stubborn. I don't know. We'll have to see with this, you know, with this deadline, because we can hound on the Blazers, but then again, it's like, what are the Pacers doing? You know what I mean? It's like,
that's the other team that needs to sell. I think I tweeted earlier days, like, Pacers and Blazers need to sell.
Like, yeah, it's like these teams, it's like, bro, what is your plan? You know what I mean? What's your goal here? Like, I just don't understand what these two teams are doing. At least with the Blazers, they had star power that they could sell. The Pacers don't even have real star power. So it's like, what are you holding on to guys for? You know what I mean?
Sabonis isn't moving you?
Sabonis is moving a goddamn thing, man.
I had to ask. So, wait, move on. What is the Blazers ceiling to you this season?
First round exit, man.
First round exit. That's what they like. Is even the play? I'm looking at these teams. Like, if Dame doesn't come back, the play-in is even like.
Yeah, they even get to that. It's dangerous for them, bro. Like I'm saying, first round exit, because that's the ceiling. Because I'm not sure if they make the offs at this point.
Yeah, that's what. And just lastly, going to play, how do you feel like, because they gave up 145 to the Celtics in regulation without JB's, 145-117. And basically, Chauncey kind of, you know, every now and then coaches go on a rant. He kind of put his starters out there for not being ready to play and not being motivated. He said, I never seen the bench have to motivate the starters in his life. A lot of people gave Chauncey flack for that. I'm of the mindset they just gave 145 to the Celtics without Jaylen Brown there. You know what I mean? So it was like, all right, kind of whatever what Chauncey says. But how do you feel like when coaches do stuff like that?
That has to be some issues coming also from practice that he's probably getting off to. You know, because if there's something that's in the, you know, that's something inconsistent in the game, it's like, okay, you know, we just didn't have it tonight, or you know what I mean, yada, yada, yada. But if that's something that you see in practice consistently, it's something that they bring to the games more often than not, it's like, that's just the coach saying, you like, I can't believe these dudes really just don't want to give effort all year. It's basically, you know what I mean? And it's sad, because it's like, if you're going to be about loyalty, this and that, it's like, my thing with people is, but with hoopers who do that, it's like, bro, don't half ask that. You know what I mean? If you're going to really stick with it, give your all to the team. You know what I mean? Like really play for a team. Don't be like, oh yeah, I want to be loyal, and then play like you have one foot out the door. Like, just leave, demand the trade if that's how you're going
to
play.
Right. And for me, the loyalty thing is this, like, as soon as it becomes advantageous for the Blazers to move Damian Lillard, they're going to approach you. Just like Minnesota did with KG, trying to find a place for him. So it's like, the team loyalty thing has always been overblown to me. The bottom line is what they care about. Right now, Dame is still selling out the building every night. He's moving units as far as jerseys. He's got a shoe deal. So, you know, team success or not, he's making the Blazers, you know, worth a lot more than what they will be without him. So we'll see what happens, man. You know, it's hard for me to, you know, I'm a Dame fan, Bay Area bred, seeing him since high school out here in the Bay. But, man, this is a hell of a bet he made, man, when he pledged his commitment to this. It's hard to feel sorry for a man when the subject's already been broached and he was just like, nah, I'm going to stick it out. So we'll see what happens with them.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Moving on to another hot topic. Lots going on with the Lakers. We got a couple things to talk about Lakers from one to the other topic. So THT is the latest, you know, big storm of, you know, of controversy. So everybody recognizes he's just 20. He has tremendous talent. I think even, you know, you have lamented, I've lamented that we see the upside. The only question has been just about fit, right? So, you know, Frank insists on starting him with the big three, even though everybody's questioning the fit because of the lack of shooting. His net rating with Westbrook, LeBron, and AD is -27.4, which is, you know, pretty terrible. What do you think? I'm just going to ask you straight out. Do you think they need to move THT? Obviously, you know, he's the probably the one asset that actually could be up for trade that they would probably potentially get a decent amount of value back for based on, you know, potential, what he's shown, ability to grow. But the fit is definitely a question right now. He definitely shouldn't be starting, in my opinion. He should be like a spark plug off the bench, giving them some, you know, scoring juice in second units, you know, possibly trying to play not playing with Westbrook as much as possible, because I think those two really don't mesh well. But what is your THT solution? Trade, adjust his role, what?
I mean, like I said, I've been saying trade him even before he came back because it was just obvious that he wasn't gonna be a good fit. You know, they need a wing defender. They need a true 3-and-D player in that starting lineup. Somebody who's gonna play off LeBron and Westbrook, just catch, attack closeouts. And shoot the ball when he's open, be a shooting threat, be a scoring threat, shooting-wise, off multiple actions as well as cut, you know, non-defense, be able to check wings, be able to switch. That's the type of guy they need in the starting lineup. THT's just not that. He's a young guy. He needs the ball in his hands. His best attribute is rim pressure, but that's also Russ and LeBron's best attribute. Mm. His second best attribute is I can't even name his second best attribute at this point because I don't think he even has one. He's okay off, you know, off the dribble shooting, creating off the dribble with his jumper, but he's not really necessarily a good catch and shooter. And playmaking wise, he's not really a good playmaker. Just off the tape, he has the skills to be good at all of those things, you know, to definitely be serviceable, all those things. But he's going to need the reps. And that's
exactly thing. I was just about to say.
That's the main reason why I said he was never going to fit. He wasn't going to get enough reps to progress as a young player. So that's why when I said he needs to be traded, people are like, oh, well, he's 20. He needs to be kept. I'm like, you're holding his game hostage. Because, how long do you want to stunt his development for? Just because you want to say we have a young guy that we can groom. Like, you know what I mean? Like, fans, you know, they just don't understand the game. Like, it's also not going to be good on his psyche because he's not getting minutes, you know what I mean, to really blossom and to get his value up. Like, it's just he needs to go, I think, for his own personal development as well.
Yeah, I was going to say that. All the stuff you said was correct, but I think for him, all that requires volume, and he's just not going to see it with the amount of usage that, you know, Russ, LeBron, or AD is going to eat up, 70% of the usage over a game for the Lakers, going to be involved one of those three, right? So I just don't think the reps are going to be there. But I agree with – I believe in his talent. Like, I think he's definitely going to be a 15 to 20 point score. Just be able to get to the rim. He's definitely going to help somebody as a, you know, as a second or third option offensively, but it's just not going to happen for the Lakers. Just, and it's, to me, I think it's a possibility to make it work with AD and Bron if the other two guys can shoot. But when you throw Russ in there, he becomes unplayable with that group. So, you know, we'll see what happens. And piggyback and, you know, bridging this to the next topic, the other hot topic was Frank Vogel. you have definitely, even the year they won, to your credit, the year they won the championship, you were even like, man, I don't know about this dude. I remember that.
I always praised his defense.
That's right. That's right. To be fair, you said you were very high on his defense. You did not love the offensive creativity. You've always been that from the jump.
That and the in-game tactics, right. The in-game adjustments on the head coaching position, I never liked from year one.
And that kind of came to a head. Like, to me, I've been defending Frank. I think the Lakers majority, well, problem number one is one, injuries. They couldn't get everybody, like LeBron James. This is, I think, the first year in his career that he's gone this far without playing four games. Like, he just can't stay on the court this year. Like, it's kind of crazy. Like, he has not played four games in a row this season. That's wild to me. But I think the main thing is injuries, mainly LeBron, getting him to play consistently. But the other thing is I don't think the Lakers were playing very – like the effort is not there night to night. I think they're used to having a certain talent advantage with LeBron and AD. I think having a lot of minimums on the roster, the gap is shrunk, and they have to be dialed in for longer in basketball games, and they haven't been doing that. I think that's another big issue. But to be fair, Frank has not been great offensively, and it kind of came to a head. They lost to the Clippers the other night. His defensive, his choice to defend Paul George a certain way, and Lou just kind of chopped it up to bits late in the game. And Lou is probably one of the best on the fly coaches in the league, if not the best. Like Lou, I think they were doing it. Lou called a timeout, and they came right out. And just for running a guy right across the key to the empty side, it was just a warm-up three, you know, every time. Vogel really got ripped to shreds by everybody for not changing the defense. And a lot of Laker Nation is kind of done with this guy. Where are you with Vogel?
Where I was when he first started. He should have never even been the head coach.
Oh, yeah, man.
You know, I mean, the guy that LeBron said has no weaknesses coaching should be coaching the team. You know, I'm not gonna try to speculate on the back on the politics aspect of it. I was shocked LeBron didn't try to push harder for Ty Lue. LeBron has really put his hands on the things that people have said. LeBron has put the decisions like people have said LeBron has put his hands on have been bad. let me not even mince words, like the roster moves and certain lineup moves that LeBron has said to be pushing for behind the scenes or openly like advocates for has been bad. And then some of the things where, you know, you would think he would take an aggressive approach to, but he's more hands off, has ended up biting the Lakers in the butt, you know. Because if you look at LeBron's tenure in Cleveland, it was he made sure all those guys who won with him got paid. All the guys who won with the Lakers got traded. You know what I mean? And then he had the coach that he won with that he wanted Black gone for that he could have got on the team. And they kind of lowballed his offer. And now he got the LA cross-court rivals, and he 4-0 against them since he's been coaching the head coach of the Clippers. So it's like, Coach Vogel, man, great defensive guy. I think he's an all-time defensive coach in terms of his mentality for NBA defense. Everywhere he's coached, he's had an elite defense, even with the Orlando Magic. So I think defensively, he has an all-time mind for defense as a coach. But I just think, you know, one, for his defense work, he needs his archetypes. He definitely needs his archetypes to coach his defense. You can't just put, you know, a bunch of guys in there and then have your best defenders like rarely giving effort and it's going to work. And then two, he's just not good at adjusting in game. like in game. He can come in with a great defensive game plan, you know, from the jump, maybe make a great defensive adjustment halftime, but just in between quarters, you know, in between, you know, runs, he's not very good at doing those adjustments. So, and for me, you need those to win championships. You know what I mean? That those are the decisions that win chips. So, I mean, you look at the coaches you have to go up against.
Yep.
The Kerrs, who has a great offensive scheme. Monty, Ty Lue. You know what I mean? It's just, man, it's just tough. It's tough.
Yeah, see that, and then like I said, in that game, it was just a lot. The coaching discrepancy was just on full display. For me, it was weird. You know, I caught on late, and I ended up going back and watching it again. But you know, Paul George was 7 for 20; like he was not burning the building down at all. And you trapping a 6'8" guy, like in the non-trapping, it's not the corner, it's not the sideline. He's just on the wing, and you sending guys at him. It's just an easy read. And he just tried to like stuff like that. I just, you know, it was just mind boggling. And I've been, you know, defending Frank mainly because I'm looking at who they could possibly replace him with. And that's kind of scary because there's no clear upgrade. Like the best you can hope for is a lateral guy tactically who they possibly play harder for. Right. That's the goal if you move on from him. So, at least my next question, if they do decide to move on from Bogle, who could you realistically see sliding in there?
I mean, it's going to have to be in-house, and everybody's pointing to, you know, to Phil Handy. My only issue is Phil Handy is he going to be able to make the in-game adjustments? And I mean, everybody's talking about the culture and this and that. And that's as good as long as the players is buying in. But what schemes are you gonna run? You know what I mean? What adjustments are you gonna make it during the game? Like, I don't think anybody even knows from an X and O standpoint what Phil Handy's calling card is.
Right.
Like we know he's a great developmental guy. We know he's great with player improvement. But when it comes to managing players on the court, adjusting to schemes, the tactics, like, I don't even know if we know what his strength is. So having him coach, like,
that's something.
Thing with Fitzdale is obviously like, you know,
yeah.
It's just it's not a good spot for him, honestly.
Right, and you know, me and you both know, looking at just Genie's track record, they are not paying two coaches.
Yeah. That's
so like, I don't even think it's like I'm with you. It's 100% not going to be an outside hire. Like the Lakers are. Go ahead.
I just hate to break it to the people, but the owner's cheap, bro. You can't win like this. You just can't win. Like, you can't win. Like, if your owner was willing to spend, you could have fired this dude and just hired Mike D'Antoni. Be like, hey, let's just maximize the offense. But the owner's just cheap. It's cheap. I mean, if the owner wasn't cheap, you wouldn't even be in this mess because guys would have been on the team that would, you know, that would have never got, you know, let go to begin with.
Right. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, we're not going to dig into the Caruso thing for the 100th time. I know that burns people looking at the year he's having.
I mean, a lot of those Laker guys are having pretty good years. I mean, Trez having a good year. I think Kuz is still bad. But, I mean, we all know who Kuz is. But then, you know, another guy, my guy, you know what I mean? And people are still emotional about that guy, but Dennis is back smiling. Right. He's putting up some great numbers. So it's like, you know, it's some – losing good players for nothing and not maximizing players' talents has been a problem for the Lakers. And that's just not good, especially if your owner is cheap on top of that. Like, these are just all not good things.
Yeah, so. Ooh, we'll see what happens with Vogel. We'll see. So, moving on to around what's going on with the rest of the NBA. We're about at the quarter pole. So we're not going to do an awards check, but I do want to get who has been your most disappointing player of the season and then the player that has surprised you.
Man, the most disappointing player to me for sure has to be the RJ Barrett.
Oh yeah, that's
come on, man. Like, what's his go to skill?
You know,
man, that one hurts. That one hurts for the Knicks, man. Like, because they could really be something. They could really be in a great position. You have Randall. You got a good coach. You got a good team, cohesive team. If your number two pick was on the track of like a Jason Tatum, of like, you know, even just a BI, you know what I mean? Like, if he was on that type of trajectory, your whole future looks different. But, man, this guy, man, I just don't know. He's been very disappointing.
Yeah, so my disappointment player was is definitely Nickeil Alexander-Walker. And I know I vowed to never talk Pelicans on this pod this year because, you know, they need to be relegated to somewhere else at this point in time, to the G League. But it's just the Pelicans made decisions around what they thought, you know, he was going to be. Like, letting Lonzo walk, like, the sting is supposed to be less because he's supposed to step in and produce a certain amount. This dude is averaging, you know, more shots than points. 36% shoot efficiency numbers. He is in, you know, the fourth percentile for pick and roll. Jeez. Roll ball handler. You know, he's in the 29th percentile for isolation. 37 percentile for dribble handoffs. Mm. This is all stuff that NBA guards have to do at a high level. This is like heavy in his handoffs, pick and rolls, be able to compromise a defense out in space. He's just struggling in all three. It's not even just the shooting, it's just a terrible decision making. And it's just actively destroying what that team is trying to. And I've given him a little bit of a pass because Zion is not there, but it's only so much that Zion's probably going to probably take a little bit of shine off you. But the defenses are focused on Ingram and Jonas anyway. So you're still not the focus of the defense. And to come out and have a year like this after they made decisions to let go of certain players and structure the roster a certain way because they thought you were going to step in. You know, Pelicans had a bottom five backcourt last year with inconsistency, and it's just arguably gotten worse this year. So it's just, Nickeil Alexander-Walker is my worst one. You know, still a quarter pole, got time to turn around. But yeah, it's nasty right now. He's got to step his game up. This is year three. Next year is a contract year. And you know, small markets, you will be on the – we will decline the option. Enjoy free agency. Get what you want. So that's my disappointing player. Your most surprising player, who's pleasantly surprised you, showed you more than you expected.
Yeah, I gotta go with the two bridges, Miles and Mikhail.
Okay,
Miles, I didn't think he had this type of offensive bag and consistency, as well as he's played some improved winged perimeter defense. Miles is obviously most people's choice for most improved player of the year. A big jump from last season, you know, in having to play bigger minutes as well as produce more scoring-wise. He's playing really well, man. Great player. And then Mikhail, been an absolute defensive terror on the perimeter as a wing defender. Many have him in the running for defensive player of the year. It's just those two guys taking the leap. You know, the reason why I pick them is because when you look at guys' wings like that, it's like you expect them to fall off. You know, like there's always those wings like the Thad Youngs, right? You know, like TJ Warrens, et cetera. Where it's like, okay, you guys are in this tier where you're young, you're talented, you know, but you don't really have star potential. So how good can you really be? Both of these guys was in that tier, but they both found, you know, skill sets that they knew that they could maximize to be great in their own way. Mikhail with the all-world wing defense, Miles Bridges being, you know, an offensive scoring threat, getting busy, you know, trying to get busy at all three levels. And, you know, so they just found what they wanted to mold their game around, and they're perfecting it. You know what I mean? And they're really honing in on it. You know, shout out to TJ though. He's been figuring out these past couple years, even though he hasn't been healthy.
Right.
He's been figuring out being a three-level scorer menace. But you know, it's just I'm really impressed by those two guys at a young age figuring out what type of archetype they want to be at the wing spot.
Yeah, you know what kind of that Suns game, the first one in Phoenix, when they went with Booker out, just the way Mikal defended Steph, that was special.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Steph is, you know, 99% down isolation, 99 percentile spot-up shooting, 99 percentile coming off screens. He's just a creative player offensively pretty much at this point is where he was playing. And for Mikal to chase him and defend him like that, I mean, he still got 21 shots up. Steph definitely missed some shots he normally makes. Like, he normally does – one guy is not going to completely shut down Steph, but Mikal made it as hard as you could possibly make it, in my opinion. Like, I think the energy that Steph had to get into those looks definitely affected his efficiency. He just made it so hard to catch the ball. And usually Steph is able to run those bigger guys off the floor. You know, Mikal's, you know, 6'7", 6'6", 6'7". And he's just staying with Steph's drive for stride around the court, making him work extremely hard to get those shots up. So Mikal, man, respect for that game. Like that opened my eyes to like, okay, this kid's an all league defender. Like that's what that game was for me. And then shout out Miles Bridges. You know, Michael Jordan don't like opening that checkbook. He turned down that 460, and he definitely getting more than 15 M's now per season.
Man, you looking at 20 to 25, man.
Yeah, at the least. At man. The least, man. So before we get out of here, I gotta ask you. So this is off the cuff. I didn't tell Kings this, but I saw this right before we started recording. So another picture of Zion leaked out before.
Oh, man.
And I like, this is not fashion, but I understand, like, you know, people got different. He got a lot of stuff, you know, a lot going on. Like, what are your thoughts about that? Just like how Zion, this whole situation is, you know, being handled. Like how, like from his standpoint, from the Pale standpoint, like his approach, like, you know me, I'm anti David Griffin. Like,
yeah,
the roster he's built, that is pathetic. You got B.I., Jonas, Zion, and a bunch of guys who probably shouldn't be, you know, more than seventh men. Like, and that's a terrible roster building, in my opinion. But on Zion's end, just not being able to take care of yourself from a weight standpoint to get on the court at age 20. Like, are you troubled for his career at this point? Like, I know that might seem dramatic, but like, is that a red flag for you yet? Or is this kind of like, you know, just a tough patch?
We've been in red flag territory with Zion for a minute, man. And it just keeps getting worse. I mean, somebody who has lower leg issues or lower body issues, putting on weight with his frame, you know, he's an explosive player. So being an explosive player, like, you know, with Shaq, his body was able to carry that weight frame wise. Right. And it was, and Shaq wasn't all at once. Shaq was more gradual over the years, you know, as
right.
He started putting it on more and more. So he got comfortable with it over the years before he finally had that peak, that stretch of peak dominance that you saw. Three-peat. Zion having this much weight so fast with the issue, with the history of lower body injuries he has, can his body hold up with his play style? That's what you really have to ask yourself, because having to attack, consistently fall down, consistently put the pressure and explosiveness on your lower body legs, like these are, you know, things of physics, you know, with obviously right, yep. force, weight, you know, and you know what I mean, and speed. Like this is just a physics thing, like a natural world type of thing where you have to be concerned. You know what I mean? With the amount of weight he's put on and with the amount of injuries he's just been dealing with. And then you have the whispers of the off-court stuff. and you know, and the CAA agendas coming going through. So it's like, I mean, it's been sound the alarms with Zion. Honestly, I personally, and I've said this for weeks, I believe that the Pelicans should have a exit plan in place at the end of the year. I think they need to have a trade plan ready for Zion. That's what I believe in. I do not believe Zion actually cares to play for the Pelicans. I mean, he's clearly made this evident. And the Pelicans would be silly to act like they should try to convince him to stay.
Right. See, this is the issue. So I think this is the Pelicans play and what these teams do. So he's got lower body injuries, right? So I think they're going to say he doesn't gamble and take the qualifying offer. Like, they're still waiting for a player. It hasn't been done since Greg Monroe, right? And he ended up getting burned on it because he didn't take the big contract they offered. I think they're saying they're betting that he will sign the mega deal that they offer him, as he already made an all-star game or whatever. So he signs the max extension, and that buys him another year or so to create a team. But we all know there's ways around that now. You know, trade me, right? Request a trade, and you'll have 15, 20 teams offering to trade for him, a guy of that caliber who's also going to sell tickets. So the teams are going to be interested. So I think that's what the tricky part is, because he's going to sign that max they will put in front of him just because of his injury situation.
Yeah. It's tough, man. I get it. You have to retain him. If you can retain him, retain him. But if that CAA noise keeps getting louder, if it comes to the offseason, it gets even way more louder. They really have to have that bailout plan, man. You don't want it to get to the point where you're caught with your pants down. Now you have no leverage. You know, not that you have no leverage, but now you have little leverage. You know what I'm saying? So it's one of those things where they're really going to need to assess Zion, his health status, and his willingness to play for it. I think that's really, for me, that's in question. I just don't know how badly he wants to play for the Pelicans. I really don't think he cares.
That's a tough part they don't want to hear. Man, you're talking about a franchise. You're talking about within a 10-year stretch losing, you know, a 10, 15-year stretch losing prime Chris Paul, prime Anthony Davis, and then Zion Williamson before his prime. Like, that's crazy to think about. And those are I'm not saying Hall of Fame players. That's Hall of Fame talent. Like, Chris Paul's a first ballot Hall of Famer. I think AD is trending there, obviously, and then Zion has definitely has a generational talent. So I don't think having a small market, just lose guys like that, you know, like clockwork, that kind of burns. But you love to see Zion start taking his weight seriously, because all these jokes being tossed around, dude is 27-8 on 60% shooting when he's out there. Like,
he's a great player, man.
Yeah.
The thing, at the end of the day, he's a great player. So, you know, we want to see him maximize the talent he has.
Right. We'll see what happens, man. The Pelican fans, I have stopped my free BI campaign. Y'all get mad when I say free BI. I'm trying to be nice. I'm giving y'all one more season, but it does not look good. They lost to the Rockets tonight. My man had 40 points, and his starting guards went 6-for-26, man. I can't live like this much longer. But anyway, follow. It's Kings Bro on Twitter. Myself, DJ Maples 55 _ MST. Appreciate you guys tapping in with the pod. Last month was a record month in downloads. We appreciate you guys. Keep tapping in. Keep rocking with us. And Kings, anything before we get out of here, baby?
Everybody trying to tune in. Push out the proper content, keep trying to get some great guests, keep on coming. I know everybody enjoys some of the guests we bring on, so just going to try and keep the heat coming.
All right, man, that's it. Y'all be cool. We are out of here.
Peace, y'all.